Welcome to the AI Business Podcast, where we feature conversations with interesting guests at the intersection of artificial intelligence and business.
Hi, this is Deborah Yao. I'm the editor of AI Business, and I want to introduce a special guest, Steve Mills, who is the Chief AI Ethics Officer at the Boston Consulting Group, or BCG. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, this has been an exciting week for AI. First, we had Jeff Hinton resign from Google to warn about the dangers of artificial intelligence. And also, the White House just recently says that it's now going to let the public vet the AI models of Microsoft, Google, OpenAI, Stability AI, and Anthropic. So everyone's worried that AI is going to harm society, which brings us to our topic for today, responsible AI. So let's start with a definition. What is responsible AI?
Yeah, so responsible AI, in its simplest, is ensuring that AI aligns with an organization's purpose and values while still delivering business impact. And I think that last piece is important, that it's not an or, it's an and. It's both adhering to purpose and values, but also delivering the business impact organizations want. And in fact, if done right, it will actually amplify the business impact of solutions. So in practice, this means aligning on a set of ethical principles, so things like fairness and equity and privacy and social environmental impact, and then ensuring that the controls are in place throughout product development process that to make sure that those principles are being adhered to. And it's really about the full AI value chain, from data collection to building the model, to actually embedding it in the business. I think too often people focus just on the algorithm and not necessarily the context in which that algorithm lives, you know, within a business. And getting this right, responsible AI right, is really critically important for companies, whether they're building or buying AI, because there's real implications to getting it wrong. There's impacts to customer trust. You know, if an AI system fails, of course you can harm individuals and society, which we first and foremost need to prevent. But it can also damage an organization's reputation, and customers just don't want to work with companies that they feel like they can't trust. There's also a piece around stakeholder interest. More and more, we're seeing boards of directors, institutional investors, you know, push for things like equity audits or not wanting to deploy their funds into companies that they don't see as adhering to sort of their CSR commitments and high ethical standards. And then increasingly, there's regulatory risks. We're seeing national, local governments all over the world developing AI-specific regulations, as well as regulators taking existing laws and applying them to AI. So there's this whole set of downside risks that companies need to address to get this right, but also a lot of upside potential. We've seen companies report higher brand differentiation and customer retention and profitability, improve recruiting and retention, and then faster innovation. And I think that's an important one, because there's this sort of old trope that, you know, doing things in an ethical way will slow you down. And we actually see companies report the opposite, that actually allows them to move faster and innovate faster.
So given everything that you've said, it seems that responsible AI is really important to do. And yet I get the sense that we're not really quite there yet. So what are some hurdles to implementation?
Yeah, as I've talked to companies kind of across industries around the world, there's, I would say, three big barriers to implementing responsible AI that consistently come up. One is lack of an empowered senior leader who can really drive the change. And this manifests in two ways. Either there's a degree of sort of interfunctional argument or politics or lack of clarity around which function should even drive this. Is it ESG? Is it compliance or legal or the tech side, you know, the AI team or CIO? So there's that, you know, which function should drive it? And then the other thing we often see is somebody, you know, this sort of a mid-level manager ends up getting assigned this. And the reality is doing this right requires sort of some organizational change and organizational commitment that a mid-tier manager, and not to undermine all the great work they're doing, but they just don't have the positional authority to really drive the change. So that's one big bucket. The next is just insufficient resourcing. Too often I see this is another duty as assigned for somebody that they're trying to do it in their spare time, vice dedicating one or more people to really make change within an organization. And then the third piece is just poor integration into existing risk and governance processes. So you end up with sort of this responsible AI thing off to the side. And that has real implications in two ways. One, you know, the organization doesn't see it as being that important, right? If it's not part of your formal risk processes and it's not on par with things like cyber, the organization starts to see it in a less important way. And so obviously that's bad. But also the advantage of being tied into these, the corporate processes, is it gives you these natural escalation paths. And there will come a time where the business wants to implement a use case and either you should not do it at all, or the scope of it needs to be changed pretty dramatically. And you need to have a path to have that discussion and not end up in a situation where the business says, okay, I get it, but I'm going to do it anyway, right? You need to be able to drive those types of discussions.
So, okay, can you tell us step by step how a company should go about making sure their AI models are responsible from the get-go? Do they start with just identifying someone in the C-suite to be responsible for this? Or how do they get started practically?
Yeah, well, maybe I'll start with the product level. And I will say, you know, as we think about how would you implement these step-by-step processes for, you know, an individual product, each product is unique, the context in which it operates, the data, the goals. So I think in all of this, you'll hear a lot of it depends type answers. And the reality is that's just sort of the nature of it. The context matters so much here. We worked with Microsoft and codified kind of a set of 10 high-level guidelines that product teams can follow. And there's a lot of detail behind all of these, but maybe just to give you a sense, there's sort of three big steps we talk about when we think about products. The first is what we say is called assess and prepare. And this is really just stepping back and thinking about the merits of developing the product, considering the organizational values, the business objective, and pulling together a team that has diverse perspectives, and even potentially engaging those that may be impacted by the product, you know, which could be customers, it could be not necessarily direct customers, but groups that could be indirectly impacted. So it's really all about stepping back and just really having that conversation to say, what are the benefits? What are the potential harms? And should we even do this? And I think that's really important that you need to have that discussion up front. So that's the first piece. Then while you're, you know, the design, build, and document piece, while you're actually building the product, you need to do things like evaluate the data and system, you know, to make sure you're minimizing fairness harms, designing the product to minimize negative impacts on society and the environment, incorporating features of human control, documenting all of this to ensure transparency. So there's a whole set of practices that need to happen while you're building it. And then finally, when you're ready to deploy, you know, validating that the product performance is there, you test for unplanned failures and potential misuse, which as an aside is that much more important as we think about generative AI. You know, the need for red teaming is really strong there. And then communicating all of these design choices and the performance limitations out to the users. So everybody understands, one, that you're using AI in the first place, but then, you know, what were the decisions you were made? What are the limitations and all that? So it's sort of the product level that tends to be how we think about it.
So would the data scientists be in charge of this, be doing it? Or would be devs in general, engineers?
Yeah, the way I think about, you know, who is in charge and who is involved, it's really the whole product team, which ideally includes, of course, the software developers, the data scientists, but also often people from the business. And ideally, you're engaging customers along the way, which frankly is just good, you know, product development anyway, but is a key point of all of this. And so if you do this right, you embed all of these practices in your product development. So it doesn't feel to the team like they're doing, say, a second parallel process. Instead, it's just embedded in their day-to-day activity and what they're doing. And it's not slowing you down. It's just part of the development process and it becomes very natural.
And you mentioned that it's not just about the algorithms, but also about the business context. Can you explain that a little bit more?
I think a lot of people focus on the algorithm and sort of the idea of kind of fairness and bias, for example. You hear that a lot in the algorithm, which is absolutely true and is something you need to worry about. But let's hypothetically say you do all this great work to minimize bias the best you can in the algorithm. If you then embed that in the business and humans add back in their own human biases on top, it's sort of all for naught. And so part of this is thinking about how is this product going to be used in the business? What decisions are going to be made? what are the potential sources of, say, human bias in this case that could be laid in? And so you have to think about sort of how that system will live in that ecosystem and make sure as you design it, you're taking steps to minimize those things. And some of those steps may be outside the system itself. If it's, say, a product to support business decision makers, you may actually want, you know, diversity and inclusion training for the users of it so that they're thinking about these issues. So it's not a pure sort of tech solution. It's really like a socio-tech answer to it often, and it may involve process or education.
Can you explain a little bit more how people can inject their own biases even after the algorithms are all responsible and fair?
Absolutely. So people can inject their own biases in that you're sort of influenced by your worldview, by the experiences that you've had. And so, you know, maybe the algorithm makes a recommendation, and let's use hiring as an example. So hiring is a good example to use here. So you may not have an algorithm that says, these are the people you should hire. Maybe what it does is presents the, you know, 10 likely candidates for a recruiting team. If that recruiting team then looks at that list and sort of makes decisions, and maybe they key on names or past experiences, universities, whatever it happens to be, they could be introducing their own biases there. And it may not even be for, say, an ethnic or racial group. It could simply be based on a university and an alma mater. So you have to think about all those potential sources and ways that bias can manifest, and then think about, okay, given that, how would we present these results to the user to minimize that? But then also, how do we educate the user?
So it seems like a very holistic approach that you're recommending. How long will this process take? And I say that because in one of BCG's papers, it says for responsible AI to reach maturity, it takes an average of 3 years. Does it really take that long?
Yep. And so like what we've been talking about up till now is sort of at the product level. How would this look? Let me step back for a second and talk about the organizational level, and then I'll absolutely answer your question. You know, truly operationalizing responsible AI requires that we put in place what we call a comprehensive responsible AI program. And there's five pieces to this. There's the strategy of setting the North Star for kind of responsible AI across the organization. What are the principles that you're adhering to? What's the inherent risk framework you're going to use? There's that sort of strategy piece. Then there's a whole piece around governance. What's the organizational structure, the escalation paths? What are the decision rights? How are you linking into corporate governance? All those types of issues. There's a process piece, which ties back to what I was talking about earlier, of actually embedding this into the product development processes, putting in place the right tech and tools, which is all about enabling the product teams. It's very easy to say something like evaluate data for bias. In practice, that can be challenging. So arming the teams with the right tools. And then finally, thinking about the culture, you know, establishing a code of conduct, setting the right tone, and just building that culture of shared responsibility. So that's kind of what we mean when we talk about a comprehensive program. Sounds like a lot. And this is where it goes to your question. When we look at companies that have been on this journey to reach what we consider sort of leader status, so fully mature programs, does take on average about 3 years. Now, that's not to say that you can't make tremendous progress very, very quickly or drive impact. You know, it's not like you need to have hundreds of people doing this over many, many years. Small steps can drive big change, but it does take time to sort of mature, particularly when you think about things like a cultural change. It does not happen overnight. So even if you put in all the processes and things very quickly, there's just the education, the culture change, building that awareness that's going to take some time.
And in another of BCG's papers, you guys, or the authors, mentioned that there were some new problems that people generally have not talked about when it comes to artificial intelligence models, and one of which is something called the massive capability overhang. Can you briefly tell us more about these other challenges and what they mean?
Yeah. So, and this is sort of going to generative AI and the new challenges that generative AI is bringing. And I think capability overhang is sort of a very specific example where, you know, these systems were designed to do sort of a basic task at the end of the day. Not in general, it's sort of predict the next piece of content in series. You know, if we think about the language models, it's predict the next word in a sentence. But we found that they can do a tremendous number of things very, very well that no one ever planned for, like design a website, you know, from that just basic capability. And so that's what we refer to when we say capability overhang. And that just makes it much, much harder to identify the potential risks when you have this thing that can be used in so many different ways and ways we don't even know yet. So that's sort of the macro scale of what you said. There's, I would say, three big issues companies are struggling with today around generative AI. And I'm going to sort of put aside the very real, you know, broader societal questions, but just to focus on the near-term business challenges, I would say there's three things. There's uncertain quality, unclear ownership, and unclear protection. So uncertain quality meaning you really need detailed review of the outputs of these systems to make sure that they're correct. You know, they can look convincingly right, but be factually wrong. And you hear this referred to as hallucinations in the media. And so there's that sort of uncertain quality piece. The next piece is unclear ownership. You know, it's very hard for users to look at the outputs and understand, is source data being used appropriately or inappropriately? Is it copying copywritten data? There was one story where a news organization put out a whole number of news stories and actually had to retract over half of them because they found it, they directly plagiarized other sources of text. It's very hard to figure out as a user. And finally, the last piece, unclear protections. There's a lot of open questions around these models of how are the inputs I put into them going to be used by the, you know, the model builder? What ownership rights do I have over the outputs? You know, do I have any, you know, intellectual property rights over the outputs? These are all open questions that are being navigated. So those are three big things companies are navigating today. And all of that is being exacerbated by what we call the shadow AI problem. And if you're familiar with shadow IT, it's the same idea that somewhere in the organization, somebody is building an AI system sort of outside your governance you're unaware of, but it creates risk as a company. And this has always been a problem. That's not new. But what generative AI has done is really democratized access to AI. And so you don't need an expert team anymore. Or you don't need access to corporate infrastructure and data. So the significance of all that is suddenly this AI can pop up anywhere from anyone exceptionally quick in ways, you know, you don't foresee, going back to the capability overhang question. And that just creates real risk for companies, and they need to get their arms around this to try to buy down all these different sources of risk we're talking about.
Well, that sounds pretty scary. And, you know, one thing that businesses are always concerned about is risk management. Is there a solution they can buy perhaps off the shelf or partly already customized for them that makes it easier to implement these guardrails?
Yeah, it's a good question if there's sort of a one-size-fits-all product, if you will, that companies can buy to implement responsible AI. And unfortunately, there really isn't. Like, there are good frameworks. You know, we have ours. I talked about a bit. You know, I talked about the five layers. But each organization is truly unique, right? The context of that organization, the politics, the organization, the structures, just the culture of the organization. And we have found trying to just sort of force fit one solution doesn't work. So the basic framework holds true, but then it's really about tailoring it and thinking about, like, how will this work best within the organizational structure? Which function really does make sense to drive this given how this organization works and how it's organized? So these are all issues that, you know, like for us, we have a general view, but really means getting to know a company to understand what's going to work best for them.
Can you tell us what's next for BCG when it comes to AI and ethics? What are you developing or working on?
Yeah, so what's next for BCG around responsible AI? You know, we're going to continue to invest and grow our responsible AI work, both our own internal responsible AI program. You know, we build a lot of AI on behalf of our clients. And so we have a program I'm responsible for to oversee all of that AI. So we'll continue to invest there, as well as all the work we do with our clients to help them navigate these issues. You know, we're spending an incredible amount of time speaking with clients about these issues. Generative AI has created a lot of excitement, as we were saying, around AI generally. But I think it's also had the effect of raising the awareness of the risks that companies face. And simultaneously, global AI regulation is moving extremely quickly. Just last week, the European Parliament reached political agreement on a version of the EU AI Act. And, you know, if folks aren't familiar, once enacted, it will put in place really extensive requirements and oversight for some AI. Failure to comply carries a 6% or a fine of up to 6% global annual revenue. So a real material risk for a firm. In the U.S., you mentioned the statement from the White House. There was a joint statement from several agencies, new legislation. So lots of things happening on the regulatory front. And all of that is creating this environment in which I think companies, they certainly really need to act quickly. And I think they're beginning to feel it. And so we're feeling it from companies. I've had many, many conversations with clients almost daily who want to understand how to navigate these challenges and take action. So, you know, we will absolutely continue to be there for our clients. And we believe this is really important as a company. I think hopefully you're sensing from me, I am deeply passionate about this topic. And so that's really what's next, is just tripling down on what we're already doing and just being there as our clients navigate these issues.
And one final question, and I just don't know if you have a view on this, but do you think that AI does or could pose an existential threat to humanity?
Oh, that's the existential threat question is a broad and hard one. I do think there is the risk of AI having a destabilizing effect if we as a society and a community don't come together and collectively manage it. And I think that's what you're starting to see, you know, with the recent White House announcement in the US, the government's thinking about it and bringing together a lot of the generative AI developers into that conversation. So the right conversations are starting to happen. And I think as long as those conversations continue and steps are taken, I'm an eternal optimist in the sense that we will end up on a good path, but I think it's critical that those conversations continue.
Well said. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and you have a good day.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
To get more AI news and insights, visit our website at aibusiness.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.